My guess is there's a Creed 3, he's just dead from the get-go. That would make the most sense.
Hmm.
You can't really, I don't know, if you killed him in the movie, everybody's waiting for him to die in the last three movies.
Yeah. So.
Then you bring back Clubber Lang and his son.
Yeah.
No, Mr. T's in good shape. He just comes back and it's just Clubber Lang. He's George Foreman now.
Welcome to Everyone's a Critic Movie Review Podcast. I'm your co-host, Bob Zarrell.
I mean, who wants to have sex with a guy named Bob?
Oh, Bob. Just doesn't sound right. Oh, Bob.
Bob.
Oh, Bob.
Oh, Bob.
Bob.
Oh,
Bob. Bob.
With me, as always, is professional film critic Sean Patrick.
I am too smart. I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-R-T.
And Josh Adams.
That's Jaime. Protege of mine. Ranked number 32 in the federal prison system.
32.
That's right.
Out of what, 20?
Visit us at ihatecritics.net, everyonesacriticpodcast.com. We're on Facebook. We have the group as well, the Everyone's a Critic Movie Review Podcast. Our Twitter and Instagram handle is CriticsPod. There you can participate in our, I guess they're not top fives anymore, movie fights, whatever else we're going to, any other segments we create, trailers. We have no trailers this week, but again, if there were trailers, they'd be there. Sean's reviews and interaction. You can pick up our shirts at ihatecritics.net and click on the podcast merch link and feel free to give us your suggestions. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, all your podcatchers, Spotify. Subscribe to the show, rate and review the show. We'll read your review on the air. And then, what else am I forgetting? Patreon, ihatecritics.net/Patreon, best way to support the podcast. And we are going to be adding a shirt to after maybe 5 months of being a certain level. I'll have to go in there and add it. Not every level is going to get that, obviously. But I will go in there and update the Patreon perks, and that'll be one of them. And hopefully we have shirts for you to choose from. Or if you want to design a shirt and make us, we could do that too. We'll see. News this week, everything's kind of light, but you had an Adam McKay story, Sean?
Yeah, Adam McKay told the story that right around the time I finished making Vice, he had a heart attack. And he's a relatively young guy. He didn't, you wouldn't think he would. But yeah, he had a heart attack. And the only reason he knew he had a heart attack was because of the way Christian Bale talked about Dick Cheney's heart attacks in the movie. And he remembered that he was talking as Christian Bale as Cheney, talking about the things that are indicative of a heart attack. And he recognized from that, like, oh, wait a minute, I remember that. I'm having a heart attack. And he went to the hospital, and luckily he caught it very early, and it wasn't nearly as bad a heart attack as it could have been.
Hmm.
Interesting. It's interesting the way, that the way people accumulate knowledge.
It's always nice when Christian Bale being a dick pays off.
Staying in character.
Not, right, I meant not Dick Cheney, but staying in character. That is kind of funny.
Yeah. At least Dick Cheney did something right.
He had a heart attack, right?
He shot a friend? We'll get to that later. I'm very excited about that movie.
That's the movie I'm most excited about right now, even more so. I mean, I'm not excited for Aquaman at all, but
I think I'll watch it tomorrow.
Dick.
Yeah, this is the guy over here that knows that I can't see Aquaman early next weekend and lets us all know that he gets to see Aquaman on the 15th. Not next weekend, but yeah. So keep it coming, man.
Why can't you see it again, or is it personal information? I don't remember.
I have to. I'm going to a wedding that night, and there's only one showing at the Illinois Side Theater at 7 p.m. And there's just no way I'm out of town.
And again, I have no care in the world about Aquaman, but my son's birthday party that day, and we're having in-laws over, and I was like, well, if we cancel the in-law, it's not in-laws, I guess it's all our families, but mixing families sucks. So that we cancel that, I could take him to Aquaman because he really wants to see it. But so far, I'm losing.
Mixing families suck. Families suck.
Take your pick. Family movies suck.
Yes.
everything sucks.
Yeah, that's right. The nihilist. Tell us how it is.
I will tell you that I got to be careful saying things like orgies and stuff. That came back to bite me over the weekend. So
go on.
I'm not going to go on. Because I don't want to.
Your wife finally listened to the show?
No. But someone else did. Brought it up. And all of a sudden, this club I was at went from like a rock club to a swingers club really quick. And I was like, what?
Whoa.
Apparently, there's a lot more of them in the world than I thought.
Wow.
I just thought it was a joke.
Oh, no.
Wait, they didn't think you were kidding? Wait a minute. Hang on.
Well, no, it's a long. It's,
well, because Bob was like, still trying to get that, you know?
Well, you know, you have a drunk wife making a joke, you know, playing along with the person who brought it up, and then all of a sudden, we're just like, wow.
All of a sudden, you're in Tully.
No. I was able to get out of there clean, but it was a fun experience. I mean, I'd love to be more descriptive about it, but someone was listening to the show, and that's so they're going to know what I'm talking about anyway.
This is great. Next week, I would like to continue the transitioning of me making a fool of myself to you talking about some unfortunate things that have happened to you.
Not necessarily unfortunate. We'll see where it goes.
Right? There we go. Well done.
So, suddenly, you get to be the Linus. He gets to be the Charlie Brown.
Yeah. Always a bridesmaid, never a bride.
You can be lucky once in a while, I guess.
Every squirrel gets a nut.
All right, new movies this week. Kind of a slow week, but we do have some screeners. And we had a couple things pop up here this week. Boy Erased came to the Quad Cities, did
yes,
it not?
Yes, Boy Erased. This is the drama directed by Joel Edgerton and starring Lucas Hedges as a teenager who comes to realize that he's gay. He's got a father who's a preacher, played by Russell Crowe, and he's from a Texas family that's... you know, very Southern, very, very Christian, and, you know, this is not going to go over well, obviously. The idea comes to send him to a gay conversion therapy place headed up by a character played by Joel Edgerton, and we watch in just absolute disgust and horror as this story plays out, or at least I did. I was angry, just angry. But anytime anybody brings up this whole gay conversion thing, I get angry. It makes me mad just thinking about it. This movie made me mad a lot throughout this thing. Lucas Hedges is really great. He's a really great young actor, and he's really giving everything in this performance. But the movie, for me, is all about Nicole Kidman. She just nails moment after moment in this movie. She is... This is some of the best work Nicole Kidman's done in a very long time, and I was really, really impressed with her. And that's really the big takeaway from this movie for me. I don't think this is nearly as well directed as The Gift. I thought that film was had a lot more structure and a lot more of a purpose to it, and that gut punch ending. You know, that's a very different kind of movie, too.
Right.
But in terms of direction, I thought that was a little bit stronger. But overall, this is a very good movie and another strong outing for Joel Edgerton.
Yeah, I went out and saw it. I agree completely. I mean, even Russell Crowe, it's hard to like his performance because I don't know. He's
authentic. Yeah. That's the key, is that he really delivers an authentic performance, and you can sense the deep conflict in him, and that you would hope to see from someone like this who could maybe in the future there is a future for him.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's kind of the movie, you see the trailer and you feel like you know what the movie is. But it really is a gut punch. Even if, like you said, you get really mad even thinking about conversion therapy, but this takes you there, and it's almost worse than you can imagine in a lot of ways. And it's just a really good movie, not really fun to watch, per se, but the performances are fantastic, and Lucas Hedges is... Has he been bad yet?
You know, I don't think so. Not yet. I mean, we're talking Lady Bird and Manchester by the Sea and this.
Mid-90s.
Yeah, Ben is back. He's really great in that, too.
He just seems like he's in everything anymore.
Yeah, I didn't even realize when I saw Lady Bird, oh, hey, it's Lucas Hedges. Where did he come from?
I kind of felt just through your words that I was going to be angry watching it too, because it's just such a ridiculous thing. But this actually happened. Am I right about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it's based off a true story. Yeah.
And so it's an account of one person's experience in a camp like this. Yeah. And so we can actually find out the end game of this, whether or not there was a change. Possibly.
Well, stay tuned at the end for the graphic at the end, which is kind of a lovely little coda.
Fair enough. I will.
It's kind of like that Adam McKay movie from a couple years ago about
Big Short.
Yeah, The Big Short. By the way, this is still happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely people should see it, and it's. I mean, the conversion stuff's one thing, but then the way they trick you into not sharing with your parents. I mean, it's just a lot. It really was. Even you think your imagination can be worse than it is, but it really is just, I hate to say worse than I thought, because it's horrible, a horrible thing, but it's beyond just people being misguided. It's full-blown abuse, and that's what's the most frustrating about it. It's one thing to have misguided people thinking they can convert you. It's another one to be abusing someone.
Well, and then on top of that, you've been betrayed by the people you trust more than anything who've put you here. You add that to what they're doing to you, and it just gets that much worse. And you don't even want to look at the suicide statistics coming out of places like this. It's disgusting. It's horrifying.
And there will be the consensus of many people that will tell you the suicide has nothing to do with their issues involving sexuality or gender identification, that it has everything to do with mental illness. And so I was thinking this when you guys were explaining it, if nothing else, you know, it's hard to watch. People should see it, but we talk about how generally the crowd that should be seeing it usually doesn't. Right. No. But let's just say people go into this sight unseen, and then maybe it alters the course of one, two people's lives. All of the people that do see that, because they see like how terrible that it is, and they don't want to end up being like that, even though they're on that path. I'm hoping this movie does something.
I will
like
say
that.
This isn't as there's no real agenda, and I think the people who would really, but you're not going to get like a Mike Pence to see it and change his mind, but you're going to get parents who are dealing with their kids, you know, and not being prepared for their kids coming out. I think that's the kind of, I think this movie could touch someone like that on either side of the aisle. Because once it hits you personally, it's a lot different than.
It's very personal for me. I wrote in my review, and I don't know if my cousin Jeff has read it, but I hope he's listening, that if anybody had tried to do this to him, I would have burned the place down. Like, that's the level of anger that this inspires.
Yeah, your parents are the misguided ones in this one, and then the abuse is so, I don't know, it's just really, it's a hell of a movie. I don't really know what else to say, but yeah, go see it and have your friends see it.
Give it to that aunt and uncle that you have that you really don't like it when they come around at the holidays or something like that. That might be a
Russell
little more
Crow.
Effective. Yeah, hey. You told me how you like that Gladiator movie, right? You like Days of Thunder, right?
This is the new Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
It's the new Russell Crowe Nicole Kidman movie.
Something of a romantic comedy. Whatever gets them to watch it.
But you know, you are right though. The Nicole Kidman stuff—it's not a lot, but when it's there, it just—it's
powerful. There's a scene—the scene near the end in the dining room—just killed me. Just killed me. She was amazing.
And it's she's also the one thing that she's the hope in the movie that kind of lets you that makes it watchable in terms of, you know, not being afraid to watch it again. You know, it's really her character does that.
Because otherwise, it would be dreary. It would be bleak.
Like, right. I mean, I'm about to say Passion of the Christ, but like if you really believe in that stuff, and then you know how important that is to some people, it'd be kind of like that. Just a bunch of abuse. But this, I don't know. Definitely worth seeing. I can't pronounce this other movie. Mirai,
yes. Yes. I was wrong about the director. This is not...
Not Miyazaki.
No. And I'm an idiot. I don't know why I thought that. I just... but no, this is a completely different animation team. But this is a pretty brilliant film. This is the story of a young boy dealing with a new baby in the house and how it affects him. He's about 3-4 years old, and he's got to try and adjust to having a little sister now, a little baby sister, and mom and dad's attentions are divided, and mom's now back from the hospital and now is immediately going back off to work, and dad is staying home, and dad's never stayed home before, and so it's this whole new world that he's dealing with, and he can't get anybody's attention. And one day he gets so frustrated he trips out into the backyard, and suddenly he's talking to his dog in human form, who's actually a prince that was turned into a dog, and he's really dumb. it's really sweet. He has this really interesting conversation where the dog explains to him, you know, I felt the same way about you when you got here. And so it's the first little lesson that he learns. And then he meets his sister as a teenager, and she comes through time to talk to him to try and convince him to like her, but also help her with this little task that she needs to do in order to move her life forward, which is fun. And then he gets to meet his great-grandfather, who is a very interesting character. And this goes on several times through these little adventures where he learns just some little thing that's going to help him move forward just a little bit. And that's the whole movie, is that little, these little tiny journeys that it goes on. And they're really, really good and beautifully animated. And this is, if it weren't for Wreck-It Ralph, I would say this is the best animated movie of the year.
Would you consider this in the vein of Miyazaki, though, drawing-wise? And obviously the plot looks like it would be something out of the plots that he's written.
Yeah, it's got a similar surreality to it, similar kind of outsized adventures as him, and a similar animation style.
Yeah, it sounds like a really beautiful story, like something that I hope would stream soon, Netflix or otherwise, because...
It got a really strange release on this. It keeps playing like every Thursday at our theater for some reason.
I noticed that in flipping through the disappointments of our local theaters today. Noticed that it was coming soon, just like one day.
Yeah, played one day last week.
I was just thinking that this one would be a wonderful tool, like other movies are tools for people to teach children about something. And in this particular case, if you've got a pending baby coming in the house or whatever, here's this wonderful film that is far more eloquent than I could ever be, you know, something like that.
And it's got the American version, at least, has the voices of John Cho and Rebecca Hall, so that helps too.
So one of two things happened when Boss Baby came out. They either like, I fucked this, I can do way better than this, or they were in the middle of making, they're like, God damn it.
yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, obviously, this is way better sounding than Boss Baby.
Here I thought I'd never have to hear the words Boss Baby ever again.
Oh, it's going to be a series on Netflix. So luckily, because you don't have to see like a sequel in the theater or anything.
Well, that's nice.
Pretty sure my kids watched season one like 4 times already.
It's been out
for like a year.
I had no idea.
I
didn't know that. My boy isn't using his kids' version anymore of Netflix, so got to be careful about that one.
See, I try to get my kids not to use the kids' version. Well, just because I don't want to watch kids' movies anymore.
Right.
All right. Speaking of kids' movies, The Possession of Hannah Grace.
Well, she is a kid, Hannah Grace, for the most part. She's a teenager who is possessed and dies in the mid of possession. But is she dead? Cut to 3 months later. Where's her body? Nobody knows. But we're in the morgue with Shay Mitchell, who's a new morgue worker. Her very first night, she's working the overnight shift by herself in the morgue. And finally, here comes the body of Hannah Grace, and weird things start to happen. Like, she can't take any images of her for the x-ray. She can't... everything keeps shorting out. She can't take pictures of her for some reason. It's weird. So she's just going to give up, except that the door to the stupid casket thing, the metal door, won't stay shut. It keeps opening. Why does it keep opening? Then things keep happening, and wait a minute, I'm going to look at the body again. It's starting to heal. How is that possible? Weird, right? The scar that was on her stomach isn't there now, and then she's continuing to heal. And then weird shit's happening with the lights keep going off and on, and the lights are going on and on. And this goes on for 88 minutes like that, and it's not bad in any way. It's just kind of there. It's just kind of happening. And Shay Mitchell's really a good actress. She's quite compelling. We don't know much about the young actress playing Hannah Grace. She doesn't really have much to do other than the sound design does most of her work. And the sound design is, you know, very strong. They used some very creepy-sounding bone-cracking sounds. When every time she moves, you can hear her bones moving, and it's creepy and gross. And her dad is a character. He's trying to sneak into the morgue so he can finish the job on the demon by burning her body alive, so he's kind of creeping around. Not bad. It's just not particularly great.
What, I didn't see this, but I read your review, and when we watched the trailer, the one thing that bothered me about the trailer was, like, this appeared to be comic relief where they explained basically what the plot's going to be, where they had some guy come in and goes, this person was possessed, blah, 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 and it seemed funny, and you kind of said that when your review, they had a comedian of some sort playing
Thune,
that character.
Yeah.
I don't know. To me, this movie could have been something like Buried or something like that, where you just have her in a room, you don't have to go through all the outside stuff, and just do the slow build and let the stuff happen and get it be really creepy.
I'm starting to have that formulate in my head, too. Confining her to a room, seeing the body 1 minute, and then psychologically, is the body moving? Is it me? But she's but trapped.
Bringing in the dad, trying to burn it down. Yeah. I mean, bringing that outside elements in there is... just that to me, that ruins the creepiness of being in one room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the cast keeps getting bigger. She's got an ex-boyfriend. She's got her AA sponsor, played by Stana Katic from Castle. There's a couple of night guards. One of them's kind of a creep. There's Nick Thune, who plays the ambulance driver, who brings in the bodies. It's got a bigger cast than you expect.
But yeah, I believe your review said if you're okay with turning your brain off and just enjoying
the
horror movie.
Like I said, it wasn't bad. Yeah.
It was entertaining enough.
Yeah. Distracting enough, well made enough.
Still disappointing. Could have been really good. All right.
Moving
right along. Yeah. Last week. We went so long we didn't even do a flick chart.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event for the linear... legitimate and universally recognized undisputed classic.
Our undisputed classic is The Last Exorcism.
Yes, The Last Exorcism. This is a movie that to me is actually the best exorcism movie. And I stand by that. I just don't care for The Exorcist. I never have. I don't know. It just, I think for me that movie's a lot about shocking you, and I'm 42 now. I don't really get shocked that much anymore, and the shock is kind of worn off for me in that one. But this movie gets me. This movie gets me every time. I like this movie a lot because this is a really strange and unexpectedly smart movie that does all these unique things. Like, is exorcism a real thing throughout? Like, he's admitting throughout, like, I'm an exorcist, but really what I do is just bullshit people into thinking they're okay, you know? He really knows that you're kind of wondering, like, is he's just helping somebody through some mental illness, basically. Like, that's what this is. And I loved that. I love Patrick Fabian's character. He's really great in this movie. He is selling this whole bullshit line the entire time, where he's kind of a bad guy. You know, he's kind of a good guy, kind of a bad guy. And I love that kind of tweener sort of character. And I love how they toy with the idea that this may not all be real. They build this very big moment where you think she's going to start crawling all over the walls. The possessed girl's going to start crawling all over the walls. And no, he figures her out. He figures it out in that moment. That's a really great scene. I really enjoy this movie a lot. I still enjoyed it. I enjoyed it the first time I saw it. And I enjoyed it this time. I love the ending. I love that was kind of a clever ending. I dig this movie a lot.
I'm going to make a prediction. As I'm watching it, I'm thinking this is kind of like the Blair Witch Project meets Hereditary. Two movies Josh did not care for. What did you think?
Okay. I believe what you said is the popular idea, but it's more complicated than that. The Blair Witch Project didn't have a single payoff for me, let alone many, which would, you know, constitute a satisfying film for me.
I didn't say shit on the movie. But I said just, would you like?
Well, the spectrum runs from that to right. Hereditary. I just was like, eh. I understand its skill, and I mean, I'm not going to debate that film again because I'm in a bad room for that right now. But The Last Exorcism is actually way better than I thought it was going to be. Way better. because I hear the name Eli Roth, and then it starts to play out like a mockumentary, found footage type of thing. And then my mind goes, oh, that's right, I forgot. They don't have a budget, so it's got to be something of a creative idea. But I stuck with it, and as you stick with it, you realize that the filmmakers are taking this very seriously. Even when you see moments of imperfect acting, okay? These aren't all of them well-known actors. Patrick Fabian, I knew that face, and I looked at his filmography. I have seen nothing except one other thing of his. He played in one episode of Friends a nurse that shames Chandler. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it's Dan the Nurse. Friends fans will know what I'm talking about. But he actually does a really good job here. I kind of understand when he actually gets freaked out. It's because he's having like a real crisis of conscience. He's grown up in all of this his entire life, and he's like, oh crap, this is real, okay? Or is it? And the film keeps me guessing until, say, the last 5 minutes or so. And in those last 5 minutes, I feel like if there was any doubt in my mind as to whether or not it was a solid film, that last 5 minutes really solidifies it. I said, oh my gosh, whoa, whoa. I felt on a lesser degree the same way I did at the end of The Witch. And I think it's because the scene is actually quite similar in many fashions. Now, the reason why I'm buying this as opposed to loving...
Well, go ahead. I'm just kidding.
I don't want to be considered somebody that says, like, well, why would you believe one and not the other? And in this particular case, I felt like there was a supernatural element that still needed to happen. Okay. I couldn't believe that this would end up being just a simplified somebody faking it, etc. I knew there was something that was going to happen. And then when you push pause, or when you're watching an app like I was watching this streaming, it shows you ads, and then you're like, oh, something's going to happen here. I just know it. I was led to believe that there was still a good explanation to come. And there was. Okay, I was paid off for what I saw. On top of that, the special effects, which are pretty much non-existent throughout the film, it's just a matter of like a really, really bendy actress doing some things. But then at the end, that special effect is actually it's effective for me. I had no idea that it was actually going to start to take shape like that, and that is a thing. I can't quite put my hand on why I like this one, but I guess you could say everyone stays consistent throughout. It's hard to find horror films that are often consistent like this.
His payoff there, too, when he steps forward in that moment, yeah, is really powerful.
Now, I'll say about the performance of Caleb Landry Jones in this one. I knew his face, of course, from the X-Men franchise, and I know that I've seen him in other things too. He often plays a character that's from the South, like this Louisiana setting or something similar to that, and plays kind of like a mischievous guy. And in this particular one, they set it up right away that you're going to wonder about him and wonder what his involvement is. There's little hints throughout the film that maybe someone is manipulating this scene, and his performance towards the end there, and he's a really effective actor in small spurts. I think he's going to stay that way for the portion of his career that he's doing movies like this, but I'm pleasantly surprised. That's got to be surprising to you too.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the use of the camera, it really helps this movie out a lot. Most found footage movies, it's a gimmick, and it is a gimmick here, but it at least serves a purpose, you know, so that's cool. The only kind they really messed up with the found footage stuff was when they're in the hospital and the camera moves at different angles. Other than that, and that's really, really nitpicky, because I didn't even notice that the first time I saw it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that scene at the end where he does step forward with the crucifix, and just the way the camera handles it from there is really, I don't know, the running with the camera has worked a couple times, but most of the time it's annoying. I think Blair Witch still did it the best, but this one does do it right up there with it, and I don't know, it really is a fantastic movie that really, when I first saw it, caught me off guard, because I like horror movies, but you don't expect it to be that good when you're watching it, and I think that surprise even elevates it a little more you know, being that good.
And like I said, I think this is the best exorcism movie I've ever seen.
You're not going to get me to agree with that one. I get why you think it, but
I think I would put it above something like The Conjuring, even though The Conjuring is a bit more scary gore, scary looks, et cetera, et cetera. I will still choose The Exorcist over this one for a particular reason. There's a prestige in that film, and it's not just the actors or the direction or anything. It's kind of saying like, hey, this matters. Okay, this isn't isolated to poverty-stricken Louisiana with a family that's non-affluent, etc. The Exorcist is like, this is going to happen to your little girl named Reagan, too, okay? And she's really, I don't know, got to be 3-4 years younger than this character here, in Nell. and so it makes a slight difference to me. And I don't think about the shock anymore. When I watch it, I'm looking at, that's a really brave choice to make. Whether or not it works on everyone, I don't think so. But it's a brave choice to make, and they're saying that no one is really exempt from it. The cut scenes in The Exorcist where they're showing that demon face, if you've ever stopped while watching, you know, a DVD, because it's hard to do on VHS,
right?
That's effective for me a lot, getting that like oddly placed creepy face in there. The creepy imagery of the statue and everything. There's just something gothically horrifying about that versus this, which is more of a reality type horrifying. So I'm going to choose The Exorcist, but it's not as far as one might think.
I'm choosing it as well. I think the Conjuring, I'll probably take this over The Conjuring, but again, you're talking recency bias, possibly. But both of them are dramas that happen to be horror, that have this horror elements in it, where this is a straight up horror movie. The Exorcist really takes its time and is a slow burn. And I don't know. And some of the effects don't hold up and kind of take you out of the movie when you watch them. They like your head spinning around or whatever. But for the most part, the datedness of it almost makes it more effective when I watch it now, other than a few scenes. So I'm still going to take that over this. I really think it's a good movie that's beyond. I mean, I guess if all you're getting out of it is a shock, that slow burn is just going to be boring as hell, you know? So that, I don't know that I think that slow burn pays off with the shocking visuals that come out throughout the end. And I mean, to me, Hereditary is a lot like The Exorcist, where it just kind of gradually builds on top of itself. I think all three movies are consistent. I know that's your argument. Hereditary is not consistent, but I do think it is consistent.
I think Hereditary is a much better build and is a much more artfully made film. I think the production design on Hereditary is even stronger than Exorcist. And I'll give Friedkin that. He's got strong production design in The Exorcist. It just doesn't move me because we're all building up to the little girl with the cross and the fuck you and all that bullshit nonsense.
And I think a lot of that is us knowing all that's there too, you know. And I will say, when I rewatch it, I am removing all that from my head, you know. And I guess that's something I'm bringing to it, I suppose. But I think I'm with you on Hereditary, though. It's, to me, that's like right there. It's like the modern day version of it, I guess. That's what we should have done, is Hereditary versus The Last Exorcism.
Last Exorcism wouldn't have a chance against Hereditary. Hereditary is still my number one movie of the year, and one of my favorite movies of all time, honestly. Like, it's risen that quickly.
Yeah. Like, it really does. Not that just Josh doesn't like it, but there's a lot of people that at the end tended to just check out and be like, no, well, I'm not buying it. And that's just like, oh,
again, it's not that I didn't like it. It's just that I didn't appreciate the.
You didn't buy the. You know, not. Yeah. You were wanting to go somewhere else, and he's not alone. Unfortunately, yeah, we were going to introduce a new segment called Movie Fights, and that was it. Sean's got a black eye.
The exorcism movies really don't do anything for me. I don't, you know, because I'm, and part of it's probably being a non-believer, never having been a believer, probably holds me back from having really a much emotional connection. But I would argue that a movie like The Last Exorcism, to me, exemplifies something so much more powerful. You've got a guy who's questioning his own faith and pretending to believe and acting in a way that's composed. Then he gets to the end and he's got to do this thing where suddenly he's got to step up. And I thought that's a much more powerful message than I've seen in other exorcism movies.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know that I'd say it's more powerful than The Exorcist, but I definitely think it speaks to someone who kind of shares a belief like you do. And I, in a way, I kind of share the belief with you, too. I don't know. I just go along for the ride sometimes for these movies. And I mean, I'll admit I'm bringing a little bit to The Exorcist by not think, you know, when you think of the Fuck Me Jesus stuff, that by itself is ridiculous. But when you put it in context with the movie,
also for me, I think when it comes to The Exorcist, the sequels have done that movie no favor.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Next week's classic, Last Exorcism 2.
I did notice
that I've never seen that one. I don't know if it's any good.
Hey,
did
you badmouth it on the show?
Yeah,
I don't even remember.
We talked about it because it was like, wait a minute, The Last Exorcism, how can it have a part two? It was the last one. But remembering that this week and seeing the 2013 mark on it, I'm like, oh, that's not.
And it's free on Amazon.
Is it really?
It's Amazon
I've
Prime.
Completely forgotten it.
I saw that Nell is the lead in the next film.
I don't. I've never saw it.
Yeah, she's listed first, I should say, but I'm kind of trying to figure out. All right, they didn't really resolve what happened at the end of this one per se. We don't see everything, so maybe there's something to it. Obviously, it wasn't memorable enough for you that in that doesn't speak well for it. It's got a 4 out of 10 rating on IMDb as well.
We did put it out on social media to see what you guys thought between The Last Exorcism and The Exorcist. Jason from New Mexico said fishing with Satan. And then Cousin Jeff had Larry David looking confused because why the hell are we comparing these two movies? One's a classic and one's new-ish. But I do think it deserves to be a classic. I don't think it really gets... You don't hear it talked about much.
No.
And I think that's kind of a shame. I mean, for me, in like the modern era, something like The Strangers, a movie that I think got overlooked would be, you know, they're different genre of horror movies, but I feel like it's kind of there with an overlooked horror movie that no one talks about.
It deserves a better place in history. It doesn't help, though, that, like, the director hasn't done anything since, and Patrick Fabia hasn't done anything since this, and...
Eli Roth sure has.
He was just a producer.
I noticed that Patrick Fabian was on the show Better Call Saul, and he's been on 40 episodes of that, and enough people know Breaking Bad and that to think that they would recognize his face more than I did to try and wander from a memory 20 years ago. But yeah, you're right. He's not a well-known dude. It's like your poor man's Thomas Jane, in a way.
I'm trying to know who that is. The fact that you remember just a random character on Friends is crazy to me.
Oh, yeah. Anyone wants to step up to the plate with Friends trivia with this guy, I will own you. Ask multiple different females in my life. I have
They're leaving Netflix in January, you know.
Ah, Netflix has already responded by saying no, they'll work it out. So in the meantime, that's okay. I have physical copies of all of the seasons. That's why you don't rely on that bullshit if you really like it.
How do you have time to watch Friends anymore?
Oh, I haven't watched it in quite some time, but I got that physical copy stuff before I was on this damn show, and I never got to watch anybody anymore.
It does make it exhausting being on the show.
I rely on my TV memories and movie memories via clips, not necessarily the whole film anymore.
Let's get through 88, and if we have time, we'll kind of revisit some movies we talked about earlier in the year that Josh and I got to see.
Number 18 in 1988. Squeezed and pulled and hurt my neck in 1988.
Squeezed and pulled and hurt your neck in 1988.
Let's start with the Oliver Stone film called Talk Radio. This is one that I hadn't even heard of until this week, and I started to put the itemized list on Facebook and Instagram. But the synopsis is that a rude, contemptuous talk show host becomes overwhelmed by the hatred that surrounds his program just before it goes national. The weird part about this is, how could I not have known what an Oliver Stone film was? Because I held him on such like a high pedestal quite some time ago. Then I got on this show and realized he's not a very good filmmaker. Have either of you seen this one, though?
I kind of watched it last night, but I was doing a lot of other things, so I can't really tell you what it's about.
It's a deeply engaging movie.
It was on Hulu for free, at least. I have like Stars and other things on it because I've noticed that it's worth paying the extra $7 for these things because all the movies we have are on there. And it was just, I don't really remember. I saw it last night. I don't remember much about it.
It's nothing. It's nothing like real talk radio. I can tell you that.
Oh, no doubt. I can imagine that. Okay. And the next one is
one
that
I was about to say that. During talk radio, they walk out of Platoon in the theater, but then I realized that wasn't talk radio. That was another movie.
That was another one. We'll get to that one third, though. The second one we'll talk about is Tequila Sunrise. Now, back in 1991, when my parents got the VHS copy and whatnot, and they talked a big game about who Mel Gibson was and who Kurt Russell was on their own. And then all of a sudden, I see this movie that's got both of them in the same one. It was like a super group to me because I didn't know better, okay? But that's how much my parents liked those two actors. My dad was a big fan of Tango and Cash, for example, you know. My mom's a big fan of The Thing. So we've got Tequila Sunrise here, and Michelle Pfeiffer is the third member of this group. And I've seen this, but it has been since a very quiet moment that I didn't tell my parents about, and I just watched their copy in 1993. It's not very good, okay? It's more style than substance, that's for sure. And if you really want to go crazy, there's some nudity in it, okay? Go for that. I mean, as a 12, 13-year-old, that mattered at the time. But it's your basic crime drama. Mel Gibson's playing this, like, drug dealer-type guy, and Kurt Russell's the cop, I think, if I've got this memorized. But it's kind of boring and really thinks that it's Chinatown in a way, but isn't Chinatown. And
well, it couldn't decide if it wanted to be Chinatown or Tango and Cash and end up being neither one of them. So you can't have the fun of Tango and Cash being terrible, but you don't it's not the gem that Chinatown is. So, you know, for me, I was a little later on. It was like in the late 90s. So the supergroup's a perfect comparison, except for it's like a supergroup that's been out for 10 years and you didn't know it existed. You're like, holy cow.
They made one really bad album and just never talked to each other again.
But all of a sudden they pop up in the bargain bins at Walmart and you're like, Mel Gibson and Kurt Russell did a movie together? With Michelle Pfeiffer?
Which has got to tell you it's not very good. I mean, if those guys are together in a movie and nobody's heard of it, it can't be any good.
It suffers from a complete lack of joy or interest or anything that sets it apart from anything different. It's like, we've got the stars now, so come see the movie. And that's
they got
bad.
Body doubles in it, though.
I can only hear the Eagles song, and then anytime I hear an Eagles song, I hear the dude say, I hate the fucking Eagles, man.
Oh no. Yeah, I hate the Eagles too.
The further I get away from the Eagles, so. Nothing to do with the Big Lebowski. Has everything to do with Hotel California playing every 5 minutes on classic rock radio. Oh,
for sure. I don't really care for that song. Okay, but most importantly, this week, 30 years ago, The Naked Gun from the Files of Police Squad turned 30. And this is one of my top five comedies of all time, in my top 50. Zucker Brothers, Pat Proft, Leslie Nielsen. It's a perfect team of comedy. Even O.J. Simpson manages to be funny in this. Priscilla Presley manages to do something that you remember.
O.J.'s funny, though, because you're watching him get beat up constantly.
It does add something to it later, yes.
It's kind of wonderful to see him shot 1,000 times.
And flipped over the railings of a baseball game. But The Naked Gun is a spoof, and it's like Dragnet on comedy steroids, okay? If you love Airplane, if you love Top Secret, Hot Shots, anything like that,
then I think you would love this. Now, the litmus test here is showing it to my son for the first time. And that was a little bit more risky than Monty Python and the Holy Grail, which he also saw. But to my surprise, he actually really enjoyed it to the point where he borrowed the copy and wanted to show it to a friend. And I said, make sure that his mom says it's okay, you know. And there are a few uncomfortable moments in the film, including the full body condoms and whatnot. But in a way, in the nice beaver comment, he looked at me as if to say, that's a colloquialism, isn't it? He means vagina, doesn't he, Dad? And I looked at him with a nod. Yes, he does.
No, it was an actual beaver.
Well, father knows beaver, so that's all I can say.
Yeah, because that used to be your little tagline after your name, when my kids would hear me edit it, Peyton would walk around going, nice beaver. And so then we're watching the movie, she's like, oh, that's from your show. No.
Awesome. You know what I love about the 80s version of the Zucker Brothers, because obviously they haven't been good since then, they never let a scene pass without a joke. Like, no scene at all in this movie passes without a joke. There's literally a scene of Frank Drebin getting some milk, and you can see in the background something is on top of his refrigerator breathing. Like, what the fuck is that? Because they can't have a scene without a joke in it.
Yeah, now that you say it, I mean, every single thing. You can't have, like, a scene where he's just walking into the police station without a car behind him, which, by the way, is the funniest scene in any movie I've ever seen. That's my Deus Ex Machina of comedy right there, is Frank Drebin shooting at his own car and asking if anybody caught the license plate, the driver. I mean, when I saw that at 9 years old in the theater, I laughed so hard that I did pee myself a little bit and had to go into the bathroom. I mean, that's how intensely funny this is to me and always has been. Boy, I love this movie.
I will say, even my six-year-old kind of, I mean, he didn't get everything, but he laughed here and there, which is clearly shows this movie you can watch at any age, and then as you get older, you'll pick up jokes like the beaver joke that you wouldn't get until later on.
A guy named Pap Schmear.
Yeah, I will say, though, of all the, like, the airplanes and the hot shots, this is my least favorite one. I don't know why. I mean, it's completely subjective, I guess, but I don't know why I don't like this one as much as the other ones.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely in camp airplane. Like, I'll put airplane 1 and 2 ahead of this for me, but this is, you know, I think it's better than a lot of them.
Well, I would put airplane and Hot Shots over it.
I prefer this to Hot Shots,
right?
I would say.
And I don't know why I prefer Hot Shots to this, but because they really are all kind of the same movie, just parroting different things. But
they are. As you stated, though, there's a joke in every scene of this movie, and this is almost like every single little thing, even the credits. If you look at the way that the credits are, at some point you're like, in case of tornado, southeast corner of building or whatever, they've got credits laced too with jokes. But I've come around on the Zucker Brothers too. Airplane used to be kind of one of those fart jokes, boobs. Okay, I was a little bored at that point with that kind of sophomore humor, but I've come around on it completely now, and Airplane's wonderful. I would go Naked Gun, Top Secret, Airplane, Hot Shots. And, I mean, they've done other things, too, like Kentucky Fried Movie, I don't like very much. Hot Shots Part Deux occasionally got some jokes.
And I'm thinking it's more of, I saw Naked Gun very young. Hot Shots I saw as a teenager, and I got a lot more of it. So I think I kind of discovered that. It was more that I think I just have more history with that. I think that might be why, but it's just I always feel bad. Like, I'm watching it, and I'm trying to laugh out loud, but instead I'm just going, that's funny. Like, I recognize the humor, but – and I'm also so burnt out on movies. It's not even funny. It's that time of year. Speaking of movie burnouts, movies have come to video. I saw one. You saw one. Where do you want to start? Want to start with Tully?
Yeah, let's get it out of the way. That way, it'll be safe for me if I get it out of the way. I like Tully. Let's just put it out there like that. But
You didn't like where it went. I'm just kidding.
No, actually, I should have expected where it did eventually go. But I'm trying really hard to understand Diablo Cody's point of view through multiple films now. I've been explained that it's a character choice multiple times and that it's a story about a character, but then I'm paying really close attention to Tully, and there are things happening away from Tully, or away from, I forget her name in the film, but Charlize Theron, and it still has a marker of, wait a minute, this isn't through the point of view of Charlize Theron's character anymore, it's off to the side. Why is the film still maintaining the same possible message that the reason that she's having these things happen to her, the reason why she needs the help, is because she's so, you know, she's doing everything and no one's helping her. And I'm looking at this and I'm thinking both parties share some blame, and it just seems that the film never quite wants to identify that. And that's a hard conversation for me to have, because I don't need to take a movie personal, just like I didn't need to take Juno personally. But, you know, about 20 minutes into the film, where she's like getting little snide remarks from her sister-in-law, or, oh, she's not a hugger. Yeah, trust me, she's not. Well, where did that come from? Nobody is that much of an asshole all the time. And I ran into the same problem with Juno. Nobody talks like that all the time. So I underwent an education, I guess you could say, watching Tully and having Beth next to me and saying, but you're putting that on the movie. You're putting that on the movie. And I'm like, ah. And I kept trying to pay attention to it, and little markers in the film that made me wonder, what is Diablo Cody trying to say with this? I just don't think she's trying to say anything. I do need to adopt the idea that it's a story about a character. And that character makes choices. It just happens to be that those two movies alongside of each other present a character that does things that might make you feel like you need to do more too. And so I feel defensive for no reason at all. And that has nothing to do with the film, because it's a very well-made film with some incredibly sweet and poignant moments and some heartbreaking moments. It's very good.
It's funny, because this is a very personal movie for me, because my wife's always, I do everything, blah, blah, blah. And so me, I put her in this role, and it, to me, it's almost an insult to her, and maybe I'm clearly adding more to it than I need to. But at the end, it's like, it was you the whole time. So I never really felt blame or being judged. I mean, I get why you would, but at the same time, I get that you understand that it's not
sure
what the movie's doing. But that's just something I've added to the movie. But at the same time, I think the performances are phenomenal. And
Charlize Theron has never been better, in my opinion. And that's saying something. The woman has won an Oscar before. She's been great in a lot of things. And I thought she was better here than at any other time.
Maybe young adult.
Hmm. And that one I haven't seen, so.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
And then I saw First Reformed, which, have you seen that yet?
Not yet.
Go see it. It is phenomenal. It is in a lot of ways, like, the movie I'd compare it to is Mother. However, I like the artistic take Mother does better than First Reformed, but it kind of follows the same metaphors. But that being said, I still, the metaphor wasn't as in your face. You know, Mother, it just like takes a giant spoon and shoves it down your throat. And if you miss that, you're kind of an idiot. And this one.
Even I got it, folks.
despite how artistic it was, this one you kind of have to work for. And it was really, after it ended, it stays with you, and you're thinking about it, and you know, you're going, what the hell just happened? Why did he do that? So, okay, he's trying. You're trying to, you know, it's like you're playing poker and trying to figure out what the other guy has. And then all of a sudden, I mean, an enemy is a good one. All of a sudden, it just starts to click and all the pieces start to fall into place. And I think it deserves the credit it's getting. I mean, it bums me out that Hereditary has fallen to the side and this one's moving up. And that I'll probably always hold against this movie, because they're both A24. But it's a hell of a movie, and it's weird to say it's Ethan Hawke's best movie because he's so good and he's so different all the time. He's a very underrated actor. I saw him in another movie this week, Juliet Naked or something like that.
I've seen that. That I was disappointed in that movie.
It was watchable. I'll give it that. This is
a Nick Hornby adaptation. Yeah.
Whoa. Hello.
With not Rachel Weisz.
Rose Byrne.
Rose Byrne and Chris O'Dowd. Good idea of a movie. Let's just go into it for a minute.
Entertaining.
Yeah, I'll just go into it for a minute because we're catching up with stuff anyway. Basically, the idea is that Chris O'Dowd runs this website dedicated to this rock star played by Ethan Hawke. And this rock star has been missing for years, and his wife or his girlfriend Rose Byrne kind of doesn't like his new record that they just kind of uncovered, and she writes a review of it and catches the rock star's attention, and they begin a relationship, and of course the boyfriend is none too happy about that, but at the same time it's his hero, so what's he gonna do? Clever idea, but it's just not carried off very well. Nothing. You keep kind of waiting for something interesting to happen, and it just doesn't get there.
It just kind of keeps going.
Yeah.
I'd say the most entertaining, interesting part of the movie is the very end when he's reviewing the new album that came out, Chris O'Dowd's character. That's really, really funny. But other than that, my point was that Ethan Hawke is so different in that than he is in this, than he is in Boyhood, than he is in... He's just a really good... but understated actor, you know. In First Reformed, I hate, you know, all the critics are saying the best thing he's ever done. That's neither here nor there, I guess, to me.
I would hold the Before movies above anything else he's done. But
it's still that I hate when you do that, when you throw that on a movie, because it's so hard to, you know, quantify that. But that being said, it really is. I think you'll like it a lot, and I think a lot of people will. You'll like it, but it'll have that annihilation feel to the average moviegoer where they're just like, what the fuck was that?
I do, now that you've talked about the plot, I do remember this trailer and being interested in it and also wondering where the hell did it go? Because I don't remember it ever coming out in this area.
It's a little dangerous, so it's not the kind of movie you get in the Midwest.
Did we not talk about it earlier in the year?
First Reform? I think I talked about it, but we didn't get it in theater.
Oh. Yeah, and you can get it on video right now. That's where I saw it, and I really think it's kind of a hidden gem this year, and it sounds like it's going to maybe get a awards buzz. It is the anti-Green Book, where this definitely takes a side, and you're going to either love it or hate it, and they even pulled the critics into the people at the other side, and they totally shit on the other side. But the way they do it is not... You know, it's not a Bill Maher, Michael Moore, or Ted Nugent type way. It's a very smart and, I don't know, it might trick someone, but it's just a fantastic little
movie.
It's
Paul Schrader.
Yeah.
If you know Paul Schrader's work.
Wrote Taxi Driver, if I'm not mistaken, and he may have written Donnie Brasco, but didn't direct it. That was Mike Newell. He's a really smart writer. Sometimes I also know that isn't he responsible for Canyons. One of the worst films you guys have ever seen? So.
He's made other good movies, from what I remember.
Affliction,
a lot of daring movies. He made American Gigolo.
Oh, the Richard Gere.
Mm-hmm. Which, if you could say anything, it's a bold movie.
Gigolos are big this week. Tully has the... Is Gigolos the show a real thing?
That is a real show.
It used to be, at least.
It's on Showtime.
It's still okay. On.
Okay. I don't know if it's still on, but did you know Marcus Buff Bagwell was on that show?
I knew that.
I know that dude's name.
How the hell do you know that
Marcus Bagwell? Well, if I see... anybody with the same name as a baseball player, I kind of look into it, because I'm like, is it a brother? Is it a son? You know, because I like that congruency of sports brothers and sports families.
The only podcast that could ever get to Jeff Bagwell of the Astros. Yeah. Somehow.
Well, he could have been a wrestler at the end, too, after all.
And we got there from Tully.
Weird.
Yeah. Actually, we got there from Paul Schrader. 6 degrees of Jeff Bagwell. Yeah, so, I'd recommend seeing Tully still, but I definitely understand, similar to Juno, it has its audience. It's not a wide audience that just everybody's going to like. First Reform, similar type thing, but I do think you'll really like that one.
Yeah. I think Tully is actually one of the better movies I've seen this year because of how challenging it was to watch, yet how clearly good it was while being challenged. I hope that makes sense.
But you can see the average moviegoer and go, what the fuck is this shit?
Well, the average moviegoer is an idiot.
But that's
Paul Schrader said as much this week. That's a nice little circular. Yeah.
But that is our show. Next week, we got a documentary coming about climbing mountains without gear on.
Free Solo.
It's called You're Gonna Die Young.
Free Solo?
Free Solo, yes. It has nothing to do with Han Solo. Relax.
Just because for 0.5 seconds my mind was... It was peaked.
It just shows him falling after...
He made the Kessel fall in less than 12.
I don't know what that means. And then we're going to bring the Ballad of Buster Scruggs to the show. It's been out on Netflix for a while. I don't know how long it's been around, but I did try to watch it a couple weeks ago with my wife, and she was like, "Want to watch a movie?" I was like, "There's that new Coen Brothers movie on Netflix," and she's like, "We want like something I'd like." And I'm like, "What's your favorite movie?" She's like, "Big Lebowski." I'm like, "Oh." She's like, "I know they directed that too, but I don't want to watch it." So I haven't seen it yet.
They are capable of making The Lady Killers, but, you know.
I know.
That sounds like fun, though. As I understand it, it's actually not just a linear straight film. It's more of like separate stories.
Vignettes, yeah.
Okay.
Like five of them.
Huh. All directed by them?
Mm-hmm.
That's neat. But then our classic, also on Netflix, if you want to watch it with us, is No Country for Old Men. I know it's not that old, but still, I think it's the same year as Last Exorcist. No.
Yeah, it was 11 years old. No Country for Old Men was 2007.
I was thinking of True Grit. That was 2010, I think. Because I considered that one. And then instead of a top five, again, not a whole lot to rank, because we've done Coen Brothers movies before, I think, I'm assuming. We must have. We're going to do a Coen Brothers fight and try to come up with the best Coen Brother movie. We want to see what you guys think on Facebook, too.
That should generate some good discussion. I mean, just off the top of my head, not just good movies and one great one,
and if
multiple
it,
greats.
If it, yeah, exactly. And if it turns into a Big Lebowski love fest, we're going to throw that one to the side because that does have such a powerful audience. But yeah, I'm kind of wondering if No Country for Old Men is mine. You know, that movie really, like, I'll put him as a bad guy. You know, him and Heath Ledger's Joker are the two best villains I've ever seen in a movie.
But then, in terms of quotability, like, I might want to watch Oh Brother Where Art Thou over and over again because it's so wonderful. Or Barton Fink, for crying out loud. I mean, we're getting into next week already.
Yep. So it'll be a Coen Brothers heavy episode. Before I let you go, I want to thank our Patreon supporters. Up here are Key Grip Levels, Jason Bryant and Charlie Messing. I'm in another. Our character actors, Cousin Jeff, Christina Cato, and Josh Paul.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Our special effects level, Sarah Ward and Corey from Ivy Envy.
May the Force be with you.
Our associate producer is Jason from New Mexico.
Everybody has to eat shaving cream once in a while.
And our movie stars are Uncle Jeff and Dave Sievers.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
If you want to be a Patreon supporter, head over to ihatecritics.net/Patreon. And if you want to pick up our Lord of the Fitbit shirt, it's at ihatecritics.net. Click on the podcast merch link.
Question about that. I clicked on the link earlier this week and wanted to see
Didn't go away, did it?
No. How good I would look in a blue version versus a black version or something. And there's the option of a standard t-shirt, and then there's a premium t-shirt. Do you know what the premium means?
No.
Oh, okay. I've stumped the merchandise manager.
Let me click on it and see. come on.
It's probably something to do with a thread count or something like that.
He's probably right.
The ones that feel like a like this shirt, like raglan or something.
Oh, it's the relaxed fit that kind of...
The ones, what I'm getting at is, what about fat guys like me? Premium or standard shirt? That's what I'm getting at.
2X.
Okay, thank you. Either way, 2X.
That's what I don't remember having to... I bought one. I haven't got it yet. But I don't remember having to choose classic. Hopefully I bought it. Somebody bought one. I thought it was me. You have the extra soft as the tri-blend. I think classic is just kind of what... maybe what you have on now only t-shirt.
This is
form,
the raglan type, the loose, light clothing.
I don't know what relaxed fit means, because that's what they're calling premium. I don't know if it's kind of like this workout kind of shirt.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, you try on relaxed fit jeans, and it's still bunching your crotch up. You really got to go for the loose fit jeans to finally step into that roomy situation. Yeah. So relaxed fit is really a misnomer.
I they're almost like yoga pants.
Yeah.
So in a way, I kind of like them. But two, they're not as comfortable as loose ones, but then I feel like I look fatter than the loose ones, so I just can't win.
You know what they'll never tell you as a kid is, you know, when they're making fun of them, is that Dockers are really comfortable.
Get them with pleats, man. I did not wear pleats well.
Yeah,
it was a double stacker muffin.
I just love the look up. Where the fuck am I supposed to go with this?
Well, no, it's like I have another, not at orgy con, but a very inappropriate way to go with this, and I'm not going to go there this time. I'm still not going to go there. That's the show. We'll see you next week.
Stay tuned for Flick Chart when he goes there.
That ought to do it. Thanks very much, Ray.
And we're the three best friends that anybody could have. We're the three best friends that anyone could have. We're the three best friends that anyone can have. And we'll never, ever, 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 ever leave each other. We're the best three friends that anybody could have. I mean the three best friends that anybody could have. That's right, the three.
Scary Movie 3 or Singing in the Rain?
Singing in the Rain.
Singing in the Rain.
Sure. Vanilla Sky or Superbad?
Superbad.
Vanilla Sky.
Superbad.
I love Vanilla Sky.
I don't. Black Swan or Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers?
Black Swan.
No, this is not fair. But
you like them both.
Yes, I do.
You're going to say Black Swan?
It's the better film, it's the more effective film, and it's my least of the trilogy. So
a knife in Aragorn's back.
Oh, no, not
here's who's back?
Aragorn.
Again, this is like saying Free Solo to him or the Kessel Run. He doesn't know what the fuck we're talking about.
Getting to wonder if you know what Free Solo means.
I don't.
I don't either.
Okay.
The guy named Solo who climbs without equipment.
It's
a guy who climbs by himself with no equipment. Is Free Solo
by his hands?
Yes,
Hand Solo.
Boo!
Come on! It took me this long to do a pun.
This would be a good in another podcast. But A Clockwork Orange or Good Will Hunting? I mean, I think that'd be a certain audience or group of hosts that could do a good job with this one, but we're probably going to go 3-0 Good Will Hunting.
We are. Yeah.
That's a movie I hate. Movie considered great that I really hate.
I have a respect for Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, I oftentimes find myself Googling, why is A Clockwork Orange good? And then just going down the rabbit hole of everybody's opinions.
Did we watch that?
No. We have not.
Well, there you go.
Sunday. 28 Days Later or The Green Mile?
I think I would rather watch 28 Days Later because it's shorter.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to go with that too because of Doug Hutchison. You know the actor I'm talking about? Yeah. In The Green Mile? Yeah. I hate that fucking guy. So,
he's made everything he's done sends The Green Mile so impossible to watch.
Exactly.
If you do know him on, he's been on reality TV. His wife. Ooh boy. Wow.
She's 12.
Yeah.
I mean, like, not that far off. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I think The Green Mile is overrated, personally.
Oof.
The Ninth Gate or Blazing Saddles?
Blazing Saddles.
Blazing Saddles.
The Patriot or L.A. Confidential?
L.A. Confidential.
Easily. Agreed.
Taken or Tin Cup?
I kind of enjoy Taken just a little bit more.
Taken, yeah, for sure.
I just think Kevin Costner is more likely to do that at his age, play golf, than Liam Neeson is. So I'll take Tin Cup. A Royal Affair or a Road Trip? I've never seen A Royal Affair.
Neither have I.
Skip that one.
Mean Girls or Road Trip?
Mean Girls.
Mean Girls.
Yep. The Wedding Singer or The Punisher 2004?
Fishing with guys.
I was going to say, if you still got it in your back pocket. I'll go with The Wedding Singer here. The Punisher is, it's punishing.
They both are for me.
If nothing, the soundtrack for Wedding Singer is fun, I guess. And Drew Barrymore is, yeah, she's Drew Barrymore.
Shallow Hal or The Perfect Storm?
Shallow Hal.
Perfect Storm. Last movie I saw in Milan.
See, this is supposed to be the one where I pick Shallow Hal and you guys pick the other one. I guess Shallow Hal wins. It's weird. Office Space or Little Norse Prince?
I don't think anybody knows that one.
You mean Thor?
Office Space or Back to the Future 3?
Office Space. Did you see that Back to the Future is the movie people most want to see remade?
Yes. And
you people suck.
That is... It's one of the better creative decisions to have Zemeckis and Bob Gale straight up say, as long as we're alive and we've told our descendants, this will not be remade. Yes. Period. And that's just like... That's so nice to hear that not everyone is for sale. The 1%, Zemeckis and Gale...
But then again, you know, Prince is being used in commercials now, so.
Yeah.
But the Beatles have been being used since Michael Jackson ruined them, so. Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, or Batman Returns?
Batman Returns is which one?
Catwoman. Penguin.
Lord of the Rings.
I will go Lord of the Rings also.
As will I. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, or The Patriot?
Robin Hood.
I'm still that whole Zero Dark Locksley joke from a couple weeks ago.
Not mine, but it was, yes.
It was wonderful. I'm still thinking about it.
Red Dragon or Transformers Revenge of the Fallen?
Red Dragon.
I'll even take Manhunter over Transformers.
Red Dragon, Manhunter.
Red Dragon.
Manhunter. Garden State or U.S. Marshals?
Garden State.
Rebecca, 1940, or E.T.?
I haven't seen Rebecca.
Yeah, I've seen it, but I would take it over E.T. probably. But.
Really?
Yeah. I like E.T., but Rebecca is a Hitchcock movie.
Oh, I redid it anyway. Sorry. Munich or E.T.?
E.T., I guess. I really like Munich.
I will take E.T. as well.
As will I. The Incredibles or Singing in the Rain?
Singing in the Rain.
Ooh. Ooh. You know what? I'm going to go... Yeah, Singing in the Rain. That's the... registered for a few films for upcoming party for wedding things, and Singing in the Rain was one of them, because I couldn't think of anything that we needed or whatnot. I'm like, well, but there's some movies that are out there, and we got that. Somebody got it for us. It already arrived in the mail. I'm not just checking things out, but I was so happy to finally have it, because I really want to show that to my son.
Interestingly, you know how Filmstruck just went out of business. Yeah. They gave people five free movies to make up for. Warner Brothers gave them, you know, five free movies, and one of them that they give you is Singing in the Rain. You don't get to choose them; they just give you five movies. So I got The Adventures of Robin Hood with Errol Flynn, Singing in the Rain, Casablanca, King Kong, and the other movie I can't remember what it is. But
well, that's not a bad lineup.
Yeah. King Kong 1933. Just given to me, just like that. Meanwhile, my copy of Peeping Tom has disappeared online. They've taken that away from me, apparently. Amazon has. I tried to bring all my movies under one little banner, and my copy of Peeping Tom is gone. But somehow I own a copy of Happy Feet. Where the fuck did that come from? I now have a digital copy of Happy Feet I never bought.
Is it possible you typed in the wrong word when you're typing in Peeping Tom? That's what you get when you're a Peeping Tom. Happy.
And we're back to the orgy.
Okay, Bob.
Cum stains in your pants. And dockers, they come right through.